It is. All right. Good morning, everyone. My name is Julie Fedorchak. It's about 9 o'clock on Friday, the 23rd of April, and we are gathered in the 12th floor of the State Capitol with a cozy group of folks from MDU. We're here to talk about case number 21-104, and it's basically a discussion about the extreme cold weather event that we experienced. Is that the wrong case number? Oh, there we go. So the case numbers are 21-101 and 21-8. So this is... go ahead.
I will say that this filing says 21-104.
Yep.
So it wasn't like just your mistake.
Thank you. We'll be having a separate meeting on docketing after this.
That wasn't ours. That was...
I know, but it's kind of crazy, all the numbers. Thank you, Pamela. She can go ahead, okay. Unless it's after 10, and then I could. Okay, yeah, she should go. Sorry, our budget is being finalized as we speak, so there's another meeting occurring right now. Okay, back to this case. This is an informal, and so that gives us a chance to talk and have a full exchange with the company, which I think is really helpful in this case. So with that, we'll introduce the parties on our behalf. I already introduced myself. I have Commissioner Randy Christman, Commissioner Brian Crosius are here, and I'll let staff introduce themselves, and then we'll turn it over to the company.
John Shuth, PSC staff.
Victor Shook, PSC staff.
All righty, so who's going to take the lead for you, Garrett?
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Allison Mann from MD Resources Group, an attorney with the company. Here today with me, we have Garrett Senger, the Executive Vice President of Regulatory Affairs, Travis Jacobson, the Director of Regulatory Affairs. We also have at table Kevin Connell, Director of Gas Supply, Sean Newsma, Gas Supply Manager, and I'll start with do you want me to start with my opening statement here or just introductions?
Sure. One quick second. Let me make sure I ask my colleagues if they have any opening comments that they'd like to make. Commissioner Christman?
I do not. Thanks.
Okay. We're all good. So the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you. So this proceeding was initiated by the commission to investigate the extreme weather events happening in February of 2021, the 5th through the 18th. Montana Dakota would like to start this informal hearing by providing a short presentation to the commission, I guess, addressing its gas supply purchasing strategy. Presenting that will be Kevin and Sean. With that, I will conclude my opening remarks and turn it over to them. They do invite the commission, if there are any questions during the presentation, to interrupt and ask the questions in time. So thank you.
I do have one question before we get started, just to make sure. Would any of this be trade secret information that you wouldn't want to be public? Because everything we talk about will be public otherwise. So, okay.
Go ahead, Jack.
Just for the purpose of clarity, too, Travis and I were talking about this before this informal hearing. This relates to the Montana Dakota Utilities Company, that part of their service, Upper Great Plains. They're going to be providing a separate filing, I think, prior to June 1st, or along with their June 1st filing. So this is just this part of the system, not that other side. And I know we've received a lot of information about both systems.
Okay. And then can I ask just another kind of foundational question? And this is probably more for you guys and staff. How is this organized in terms of electric versus gas?
Because
our questions were related to both, weren't they?
Right. We sent requests for both to all of the companies. This proceeding is just meant to talk about the gas side.
Okay.
What I'll likely do is file a memo on the electric side. The impacts are virtually non-existent.
Okay.
On that side.
Excellent. So. All right. I'm glad that you've confirmed that this is likely mostly on gas, because I gathered that by the people who were here. But now it's good to know that something wasn't just buried. Okay, very good. I think that's it for questions. We can go ahead and hear what you guys have to say. Matt, can you bring up the presentation, please?
Yes, that's the correct one. Thanks, Matt. As Allison mentioned, my name's Kevin Connell. I'm the director of gas supply for MDU, and we have put together a presentation. I'll be sharing the presentation with Sean, but we have put together a brief presentation on our gas procurement strategy that we use at MDU to minimize a couple of objectives to minimize the impact of these high impact, low probability type events that occur from time to time, and to also allow us to take advantage of pricing, favorable pricing when it occurs over time as well. So we'll start the presentation with the purpose, our purpose in gas supply as we see it, and that's to sustainably keep our customers' cost of gas at the most affordable price possible and maintain some extreme level of reliability for our firm customers and to meet their expectations. And some of the a couple of the benchmarks that we use in gas supply is how does our natural gas cost compare to the regional market prices? We want to be at or better than what we see for regional market prices on a regular basis. And secondly, to ensure that the delivery of that gas is available to all of our firm customers in all types of demand situations. So our presentation today will touch on two parts, basically. First, I'll cover the gas procurement strategy portion of the presentation, and then I'll turn it over to Sean. And Sean will show us or explain to us or discuss with us how that strategy was implemented in the 2021, our last heating season. I'll start out with a couple of company facts first, just to kind of set the table. Our normal heating season demand, as we show on that third slide, is approximately 27.6 million decatherms for the period November through March. Our design day, or the maximum day that we would anticipate occurring in that same period, is about 410,000 decatherms per day, the maximum day that we would anticipate. And we also have a base demand for our essentially 286,000 gas customers across our service territory of 100,000 decatherms a day. So we've got a base demand that we planned for of 100,000 with a peak day or a design day expectation of about 410,000.
And the normalized demand is this the cumulative for the whole season?
Yep, that would be the total from November through the end of March. First of November through the end of March, we would anticipate in a normal year that we would purchase move about 27,600,000 decatherms to those customers for that total 6-month time frame.
Okay. And is normalized here the same definition of normalized as in like weather normalized or is
correct? Okay. Correct.
Okay.
So to meet those objectives, we contract for storage on the interconnecting pipeline system that feeds much of MDU's service territory. And we contract for 13.1 million decatherms of storage, firm storage capacity. And we have that available to us every day in the winter. We can draw that storage out of those facilities at a rate of 229,000 decatherms per day. And that's guaranteed to us each and every day.
Kevin, how do you set that amount? It's about half of your total seasonal demand. The 13.1 million, if
correct,
it's about half. How
yep,
do you
it's
decide?
About, what it's about half. Back in open access days, back in the late 80s, early 90s, 1985, as a matter of fact, when WBI and or when MDU split into WBI Energy and MDU Utility, the assets were split at that point, and we had the utility had an opportunity to take a look at okay, how much of the storage capability in that field was assigned to what we were providing, what was being provided to the firm customers, MDU's firm gas customers. There were some opportunities at that point, but at that time, MDU was the largest and essentially 98% of WBI's firm customer base. And they were offering a storage service to the utility company in that split. And it made a lot of sense for the utility company to take as much of that storage as they could, because at 98% of the firm customer base of the pipeline, you were going to pay for that cost of service, if you will, pipeline's cost of service. Mm-hmm. So the decision was made to maximize that benefit. We were going to pay for it through rates of some sort anyway. So we maximized the level of service, storage service that we could take at that time of separation, and we still to this day keep the same have the same level of storage contract on the pipeline.
So has the percent of your total demand gone down though?
As
your customers have
as
grown?
The customers have grown. Also in the early 90s, the storage asset represented about 60% of our total storage requirements. Now, through growth, through customer growth, we have seen that whittle down a little bit. Now it's about 50%. It represents about 50% of our winter expected demand.
If you could take more, would you? Would it be beneficial to use to secure like 75% of your peak demand?
That's a good question, Commissioner. We've got some slides that Sean will go through in a couple okay. minutes here that will help show where that might lie,
sure.
If it was a possibility, and it's going to be highly dependent upon what that service going to cost you, because at this point that's not available on WBI. There would have to be some enhancement to their system to make that happen. So we would have to evaluate that. But Sean has some slides a little later on that might make that a little bit more clear.
Is the 229,000 decatherms on the withdrawal capacity, is that the limiting factor, the outbound infrastructure, if you will, distribution infrastructure from the storage facility, or are there other limiters?
It's a combination. It's a combination of takeaway capacity, I'll say pipeline capacity, to get that gas away, but also field pressures. What is the pressure, the underground pressure, the field, and the compression capability. So it's kind of a three-legged stool, if you will.
Is the takeaway maxed out right now with pump stations, et cetera?
You know, I don't know if WBI's firm capacity is completely maxed out. There may be a very, very small portion. It's largely fully subscribed. And we had that discussion just the other day, and we'll be checking on it. But there isn't, I don't believe there's any more than about 5,000 more decatherms per day of capacity. Okay. It's essentially fully subscribed at this point.
Is that the Cabin Creek area, the storage facility?
Baker, yep, that's one. And we'll show that in another slide, the diversity associated with that. There's also another storage field that we rely on WBI's system, and we'll show you where that how that's situated as well.
And what year did you say that split was? WBI?
85, I believe, is when MDU P&T and MDU Utility split.
And when you were talking 98 point something or 99 point something percent, so am I correct to conclude, and you said you've maintained the contract throughout, so this and that's for like 13.1 million decatherms now. So if we were in the late 80s and sitting here, then the heating season normalized demand was more like 13 or 14 million, and And that's kind of been your growth in the last 35 years?
Yeah. The growth has taken us, I'd mentioned earlier that early on when we initially subscribed or split, storage represented about 60% of our heating season. Now it's down to 50%, so there's about 10% change over time. I don't have a calculator.
Well, you had growth, you also considered conservation, so there was a big offset.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I thought you had 90-some percent.
We were 98% of the firm contracted capacity on the pipeline.
Okay.
We were largely
main customer.
The only firm customer on the pipeline, right.
That's not the case anymore.
No. Through some of their expansions, continued expansions on the pipeline system. We're still a very large part. Sean, do you know for sure? I want to say we're like 70 or 80% of the...
We are on their overall integrated system. WBI's recent projects have added large customers with very large volume throughput. For example, their Wofford City area expansion. So on a volumetric basis, we're more in that 50% range. As far as using their legacy integrated system, we're still the vast majority of their moving gas.
Yeah.
Okay.
So as we continue to discuss the storage, there's one more caveat for that contracted storage service that we have on WBI, and that's the fact that we are required to cycle at least 80% of that 13 BCF or 13 million decatherms on an annual basis. So we need to draw it down to at least 20% of that volume and then refill it and guarantee that we can cycle that. Or there's a cost associated with it. There's a penalty associated with it.
That's not an issue really, though, considering your seasonal demand, is it? I mean, do you to not using that much?
Absolutely. Really? From time to time, we certainly try not to. Our goal going into a winter, but in the case of a warmer than normal winter and a significantly warmer than normal winter, the possibility exists that we don't get all of our storage turned by the end of the heating season. But we certainly try to. Or we attempt to.
What effect can you have on it, though? I mean...
There's some, as we get into the gas supply portfolio, we allow ourselves some opportunities, some expectations to actually purchase gas on a spot market basis or on a day-to-day basis. But these are all risk mitigation strategies that we need to consider going into a heating season to try and keep that overall cost to the customer as low as we can, but still ensure the reliability that's required for our firm customers.
Okay. Be nice if you could foresee the future.
Right? So before I get into a lot of the details of the specific strategy, I wanted to take a look at our storage. That storage component, that 13.1 million decatherms that we have, we plan to fill on an annual basis prior to the heating season because, like you say, that's hugely advantageous to us. That's gas we can put in the ground at summer prices, and we can use that in the winter then to support the heating season demand of our customers. We also plan on some interruptible storage. Again, it's usually favorably priced gas that we're purchasing in the summer. We can store it and use it in the winter. So typically we're in that 2 million decatherms range that we target for interruptible storage going into the heating season. By the end of the heating season, our 20% cycle or 80% cycle leaves us with about 2 million decatherms that we would plan to have in storage coming out of a heating season. And that's protection or mitigation against a colder than normal February, March, April, if you will. It ensures that we are not out of storage in a colder than normal or predicted situation coming out of the winter.
I don't understand the interruptible storage.
It's not guaranteed.
Is that WBI's interruptible storage?
It's a service they offer.
Okay.
Similar to their firm storage service. Their firm storage service, they guarantee that we will have that gas every day of the heating season.
At a set price that you've committed to ahead of time?
Yeah, they have an injection fee. They have a withdrawal fee. They have a capacity fee that they charge. They have a commodity-based fee that they charge. So there are costs associated with the storage service.
But, Kevin, they're guaranteeing the capacity on the pipe to deliver that. That's what the firm means, is capacity on the pipe to deliver.
But have you set the price for what the gas costs?
That's set, as he mentioned, as we inject it in.
Yeah, so you've that's
so we
set
buy it in
time.
The summer. We buy it in the summer at a known cost, and then we inject it.
And that's the 13.1 million.
And 13.1 million decatherms we purchase over the course of the summer and then inject it.
And so at that point, it's your gas.
Yep.
You don't ever have to buy it again. You just have to pay them to store it and get it to you.
Right. Right.
And how does the interruptible work then as compared to that? Is that your gas too? Have you bought
that? That's still our gas that we bought ahead of time, put into storage. But they don't guarantee that it's going to move in all situations.
Yeah, if there was really a ton of demand, then you might get bumped.
You might. Yep. Yep.
Okay.
So our plan for interruptible is to get that out as quickly as possible. That 2 million decatherms, we try and get out before it gets really, really cold, before the bitter cold, and there's potential constraints and capacity issues on the pipeline.
How much cheaper or how much you save having that versus the firm? I'm assuming that's why you do it, right? The cost.
The difference between the interruptible storage and the firm storage? Oh, yeah. The firm storage, you pay a capacity charge every day. There's a demand component to it. You reserve the right to have that gas, that capacity, and to be able to rely on that every day.
Mm-hmm.
Interruptible comes at a lower cost because there's no guarantee you're going to get it.
Right. Could you give a percentage? Like, is it 25% cheaper?
Do you know off the top?
It's really the interruptible has no fixed costs. You're not paying that reservation to be able to move it. You pay a higher commodity, a per unit that you move in and out on the interruptible.
So when all is said and done, what's the difference? Any idea, percentage? How much less it costs?
I think it's 18 cents a decatherm to cycle that. That was the last calculation.
18? Compared to our firm.
Compared to our firm, which is only 2 cents is the only commodity to the total cost for capacity for firm for the 13 million is 775,000, and then for the interruptible, 2 million times 18, it'd be well short of $1 million for a year's worth.
It's probably about a tenth.
Okay.
10%.
10% less.
Yeah, probably about 10%.
Yeah, I hate to. I'm going to ask one more question, but we're only four slides in, and looking at the clock, we're in trouble.
And we thought about not having an informal.
Yeah. Well, the good part is, we can order lunch at noon.
We can set another meeting.
Just a basic question. Is this shared storage, or is a storage contract you have with WBI, with the Bakerfield, and is it Elk?
Elk Basin is the other one.
Yep. I sped ahead a little bit. Is that exclusive to MDU or is that shared storage?
The pipeline storage itself is available to whomever contracts, but the service we have is purely MDU's storage service. That's our right to store and for them to keep gas on our behalf during the summer and allow us use or access to it. But we do not share that service with any of the other utilities.
Okay,
speeding ahead.
Okay, so moving ahead. So we take a look at our total heating season demand of 27.6 million decatherms, and we subtract from that what we have in storage, $13.1 million. It leaves us a remaining requirement, if you will, for the heating season of about 14.5 million decatherms. And that 14.5 decatherms, we need over a 151-day period between November and March. So you divide your 14.5 by 151 days, you come up with an average of 96,000 decatherms is what we need to purchase going into a heating season. And then where the strategy begins. Now, how do you do that? What do you do for that 96,000 to mitigate some of these more impactful situations that can occur? So we take a look at some of the pricing opportunities that are available to us. We can secure some of that supply on a fixed price basis, and we generally stay in that 25 to 50% of that 96,000 that we're going to need every day for a normal heating season. But between 25 and 50% of that, we will try and fix. So it's a known cost into the winter. But that's highly dependent upon what offers we get and what we see as future market pricing in the upcoming heating season. We'll also take a look at some of the contracts and possibly tie them to index-based, more of an index-based contract, where it will be tied to a first-of-the-month index, and again, as market dictates. And then there's a small portion of it that we generally leave open that we would purchase those requirements on a day-to-day basis, and it could be on a fixed price or it could be on a daily index pricing. And the reason we leave some exposure to the day is because winters can be warmer than your normal plan, and we can't. It's difficult if you end up in an oversupply situation. You don't have the demand for the gas that you've contracted. So through these three pricing mechanisms, we try and mitigate some of that oversupply-type risks, and also keeping in mind that being short isn't necessarily ideal because you may expose yourself to some extremely high prices as well. So it's a balance that comes into play coming into
the season. You have a team of folks that are working on this in the day ahead and real time. How many folks do that?
We have a department of, well, it's down a couple, four, five, six, seven, eight. There's about eight of us, right?
Eight of us that are on a day-to-day basis.
Through the nomination scheduling process, the planning process, gas acquisition process.
And where do these trades take place? What is the name of the platform or the market or whatever?
We don't actually trade on a market. We still maintain contact with our suppliers or marketers.
That's direct?
There's a lot of direct. We do have access to the subscription on the Intercontinental Exchange platform, ICE, if you will. And we do, and I'll mention that here in a couple slides as well, we do utilize that to keep an eye on what the market's doing so that we can see on a real-time basis what pricing expectations are and what's being traded and at what price those trades are occurring. So we do on a daily basis stay tied to the real-time market as well for pricing.
When you do the fixed price agreements, are you buying a certain amount of gas then, and you will let them know which moment of which day you want it? Or are you buying a certain amount for at all times that they have to keep feeding?
Yeah, there some of the contracts that we have are for a set volume for the entire heating season. Some are a set volume for the entire month. Some are a set volume for a single day or multiple days in the case of a weekend. And in the case of the February cold weather, that was a long holiday weekend over Valentine's Day, and those volumes were constant over a four-day weekend. So there's many opportunities and options available to us, and we take advantage of all of them from time to time. Certainly, it's not as desirable to be into a four-day weekend having to buy a set amount, and you've got demand that's changing over the course of that weekend. But those are all things that we deal with.
So all these contracts look different.
Yep. Yep.
Even besides the price.
Yep.
Okay.
Taking a look at our portfolio design, and I've kind of touched on a lot of this to this point, but there are three keys to our portfolio design. Number one, we want to be diversified. We want to diversify on a regional basis across our service territory. We want to diversify on a supplier basis. We don't want to, if you will, put all of our eggs in one basket. We diversify across the available suppliers that operate or do business in our service territory, and we also ensure price diversity through a combination of fixed price deals, index-based price deals, daily index, daily fixed, to diversify and mitigate potential pricing risk. On the supply receipt side, some of our supply that we receive or that we purchase or procure is on system. It's directly connected to the pipeline that provides us gas. Some of the gas that we purchase is at interconnects with other regional pipelines. And then finally, we rely on our storage as a major portion of our supply portfolio. And I did touch on these supply price options, the fixed, generally a longer term. We'll contract for capacity on a term that's greater than a year at some fixed price. Also the monthly index base that's tied to inside FERC. Storage again, which is largely our summer price. And then gas daily index for our daily spot purchases, just to fill that remaining gap between what we've got procured and what it's going to take to meet that particular day's demand.
And are these contracts that are between a company like MDU and the companies that we're familiar with that have gas processing plants, or is there a whole other layer of entities in between there?
You're probably familiar with some of those that we contract. One Oak, for instance, SEMA, MECO, Rainbow, JETCO, Sequent are some of the larger companies that we were, and marketing outfits that we would purchase or have contracts with to purchase gas through.
And this upcoming supply are those types of entities that you're probably more familiar with.
Yep. To give you an idea of where do we get our gas, we put a couple charts together for you. And the first one shows some of the on-system that I referred to, on-system supply that we contract on an ongoing basis. This is more of the legacy supply. A lot of these are plants and facilities that have been connected to the pipeline for years, and we've had contracts to purchase their gas for years. Quite a portion of them are located naturally in the Bakken and represent some of the cheapest gas that we can buy at this point.
Kevin, that's about 40%, 50% of our gas purchases are from the Bakken. Is that
about 60% of our 60% of our supply comes out of the Bakken?
Should make sure your mic is on so we get you recorded. Thank you.
My question was, what percentage of purchases are from the Bakken?
Yes. Perfect. So we do diversify across the pipeline in where those supplies are located. And we have some in the far west, in south central Montana and north central Wyoming, as well as the Bakken area, northwestern North Dakota, eastern Montana. And we try and maximize these supplies, especially because they're so favorably priced going into the heating season. The next slide shows some of the regional interconnects, or the interconnects with regional pipeline companies. These are very liquid points. There's gas available on a day-to-day basis. We can purchase that last piece of supply that we need more easily from these locations. Those legacy locations don't typically have a lot of day gas available for us to buy. They contract their total production And that's for their protection on a month-to-month basis. So they have very little that would be available on a day-to-day basis. But these interconnects with regional pipeline companies provide us a lot of opportunity for little pieces of gas that we need to meet demand on a day-to-day basis throughout the winter. And then to the storage. We also have diversity in our contracted storage in that, as Brian mentioned earlier, some of our gas is stored in the Baker Cabin Creek facility in eastern Montana, and there's another a percentage of our supply that we have allocated to the Elk Basin Reservoir, which is in north-central Wyoming and south-central Montana. We've talked about approximately 30% of our total annual supply of gas flows through storage on an annual basis. And it also, our storage service also represents about 50%, Julie, as you had mentioned, about 50% of our heating season requirements. So taking a look at supplier diversity, since the winter of 2017-18 heating season, we did a little research. We've actually contracted for gas with 24 different suppliers. So there are a lot of suppliers available to us in this region, and we do take advantage, and that's helped protect from supplier default. Spread our requirements over multiple suppliers. Any one supplier has difficulty, it doesn't present a huge problem for MDU in meeting its firm commitments to its natural gas customers. A couple of targets that we have in place. We target a maximum, no more than 10% of our total supply do we want committed to a single facility on the system. Again, for the same type of risk. If something should happen with that facility, we don't want to be highly exposed to that outage. So none of our suppliers will have more than about 10% of our total heating season requirements committed to them. On a single supplier basis, we will not commit more than 20% of our heating season requirements to a single supplier for the same reason. Should something catastrophic happen with that supplier, we don't want that kind of exposure and that kind of risk for our customers.
I believe you had mentioned 60% of the gas comes from the Bakken.
Correct. Approximately.
Do these ceilings create any type of a limiting factor on, I don't know who the suppliers are in the Bakken. I don't know if they're two primary and you've got 10 or 11 or 12 very small players, if you will.
That's exactly. There are large players involved in the Bakken, and there's some relatively smaller facilities and operators in the Bakken, and it's somewhat limiting when we put these caps on there. But we issue an RFP, a request for proposal, twice a year for our seasonal requirements, once in the spring and once in the fall. So going into the fall, we'll issue an RFP request, and all of those requests that we get then will be evaluated on a reliability basis, a volumetric basis, and a price basis to determine the best mix going into the heating season. And we do take advantage of we do utilize all the players, all the participants, if you will, and give them consideration going into the heating season.
I would have to, not to get off track, but I would imagine as more wells are drilled in the Bakken, even though I think there's an inverse relationship between oil production and gas production, at least as a percentage of output, from a well pad. But as more wells go in, it seems like they're just trying to push that gas out and get what they can for it, and they may not even be making money on the gas off of the wellhead, but the requirements for flaring, et cetera, come into play. So it must be advantageous for the company, for MDU, from a pricing standpoint. Is that correct?
Pricing's very, very nice in the Bakken at this time. There's a lot of associated gas, what they call it, and the opportunities are good for us to purchase gas from that area, that region. And like I said earlier, it's some of the lowest priced gas that we can purchase.
Just doing a time check, how much after 10 can you guys stay? How about you two?
I can stay for a while.
I'm here all day.
All right, so I'm going to say maybe we can go till 10:30, but we still should probably wrap this one up within like the next 10 minutes so we can leave plenty of time for the the next one. So if we can kind of speed through, I think we got a lot of stuff on the front end that is somewhat consistent with what you've got scheduled here behind. So,
Pricing diversity, I think we've covered that. We use various pricing mechanisms. We've discussed those in great detail. When is it that we go out, that we would go out for day price gas? Because that typically during the heating season has the most risk associated with on a pricing basis. So we take a look at what we've got contracted, our 96,000 a day, our 229,000 that we can deliver from storage, leaves us at 325,000, and that's our target. Anytime we project our demand to be over 325,000, we will be in the market, we will be in the day market to purchase gas. The process that we use, I did kind of allude to this earlier, once we identify that need, we consult ICE, Intercontinental Exchange, to evaluate real-time trading, what's happening, and then begin the process of soliciting bids or contracts or opportunities for us to buy gas. And then we use that information, that real-time information, for a reality check, if you will, for those offers that we get to purchase gas. And make the decision whether that's becomes a fixed price deal or we'll leave it as an index based pricing. On the next slide, as I've discussed, our focus is on a balanced portfolio. We want to guarantee a supply of gas in cases of supply shortage. We want to protect against the high-impact, low-probability events that occur throughout the heating season. We want the flexibility to take advantage of favorable pricing, should that occur in a warmer-than-normal year, and allow ourselves to adapt to this ever-changing weather and conditions that present themselves throughout the heating season, and make sure that we don't end up in a significant oversupply situation by over-contracting for gas. So with that, I'll turn it over to Sean. Sean will discuss with us the implementation or the actual execution of this strategy then going into the 2020-2021 heating season.
Thank you, Kevin. Yeah, a lot of these slides will look similar to the ones you've seen. What I want to do today is highlight what actually transpired as we went through this year's heating season. So we started the season with a total storage balance of 14.2 million decatherm. That is slightly under our 15.1 that we typically target with. That's due to a couple of factors. Number one, we had a colder end of fall on the injection season, if you go back to October, so we came up a little short on that. And additionally, prices weren't conducive to putting a whole bunch of extra gas into that interruptible storage and things like that. So with our target of 2 million decatherm at the end, that gave us a 2020-2021 heating season withdraw target of 12.2 million. If we subtract that 12.2 million decatherm of storage off of our normalized demand of 27.6, we had a purchase requirement of 15.4 million decatherm, or what comes to be an average of 102,000 decatherm a day. As we entered the heating season, as we looked at forward forecast from a temperature perspective, we did notice, and it was widely reported, that there was a lot of expectation of a warmer than normal conditions. So we actually contracted for 95,120 decatherm a day. And then, of course, we have the option on a monthly basis to pick up more, if it would have been a colder than normal November and our storage targets might have fallen behind, we would have caught ourselves back up. But in this case, if you'll recall, November and December and even most of January were really quite warm. So we never did act on that because we were staying right in line with our storage targets. In looking at the IFERC pricing and the fixed pricing that the vast majority of our gas was contracted with, the weighted average cost of gas for our fixed price supplies were $2.57, and of course that stays the same throughout the heating season unless we were to add new fixed price contracts during the heating season, which we did not this year. The IFERC and CIG and IFERC Ventura pricing stayed between that middle $2 and just short of $3 throughout the heating season, which is pretty well what we expected going into the heating season. It's got about a 50-cent range in there most of the time. Our end-of-season balance, so after March 31st of this year, we had 2.3 million decatherm, which is about 300,000 over target. We consider this a good ending balance as far as scheduling and purchasing gas. Our total actual withdrawal ended up being 11.9 million decatherm. Our total November through March deliveries was 26.8 million decatherm, which is 800,000 decatherm below normal. Again, we did, generally speaking, this winter have a warmer than normal winter. And then the last table, I'm breaking out the various types of purchases we made against the various deal types. The following slide is just a pie chart depicting that table. So we've got our 48% of our supply that entered the system was out of storage, which is relatively close to our 50% strategy. 16% of our supply was priced against a fixed price deal. 34% was priced against an IFERC or first of month price. And then we had that 2% wedge, which is our gas daily prices, which is the primary reason we're here talking today.
Say that one more time.
So the 2% was priced in the daily market. And typically for Montana Dakota utilities, it is either 2% or less. We buy very little day gas. And that's only, as Kevin mentioned earlier, we're only buying day gas when our total system demand for a given day exceeds 325,000. And one of the earlier slides had stated that there was only, since the 2017-2018 heating season, there's only been 17 occurrences where our daily system demand exceeded 325,000. As a matter of fact, 10 of those occurred in February of 2021. So,
wow. 17 in what time frame?
From beginning November of 2017.
Oh, wow.
So the last 4 years.
Yeah. Okay. There was only 17 times, and 10 of those were this year.
Correct.
So
and
if
then,
you just
and
looked
and
at...
And 10 of those were in February of this year.
Yeah. If you just looked at the slide previous to this like the season, you would look at that and be like, oh, there was nothing that happened unusual, right? Because you ended up warmer than normal, didn't use, it was normal.
But on a whole, yeah. Except for those darn 10 days in there,
baked
yes.
Within it is a whole bunch of crazy.
Yep.
Okay.
And this graphical representation is from November 1st through March 31st of our supply deployment against demand. The orange bars across the bottom, which is a straight line, that is our flowing under contract supply. So that's our combination of fixed price and IFERC-based pricing. Again, that's the 95,120 that we purchased throughout this last heating season. The gray lines is our daily storage withdrawal, and that brings us up to the blue line graph, which was our daily demand from the start of the heating season to the end of the heating season. You'll also see in February where you have some yellow lines in there, that was our day market exposure. In other words, days where our total demand exceeded 325,000.
What's the red line again?
And so the red line, that's a great question. The red line, what that is if we had went out and purchased 100% of our need against either fixed price or the IFERC price, meaning if we mitigated it so we had zero risk to the day market, that red line would represent the total amount of supply that we're going to be introducing to the system every day of the heating season. Is that?
Why does that matter?
Well, why it matters is if you compare it to the blue line, which is our total daily demand throughout the heating season, you notice that the what appears to be the majority of days during the heating season, we would have to purchase more gas than we have of customer demand to take that gas away. Additionally, if we did that, that total storage withdrawal that we hope to take out of storage during the heating season, we wouldn't be actually taking gas out of storage. In fact, we'd be putting gas into storage in the wintertime.
Say that last part one more time.
So any case where the blue line is lower than the red line on the graph, mm-hmm. on those days we would be forced to inject natural gas into storage.
Okay.
And that's not something we try to do. Generally speaking, we've got higher prices, and that would prevent us from withdrawing all of our gas during the heating season.
And again, the red line is if you did what? Bought?
If we bought enough flowing supply plus our 229,000 of storage to get up to our peak day demand of 410,000.
Got it. So that's kind of like if you had not, looking back, I mean, you never know what your peak day demand is going to be.
You don't. We mathematically calculate what we estimate it to be, and that's where that 410,000 comes from based on customer count growth and a variety of factors. Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. So 410 is what you estimated your peak demand to be, and that's where it was?
No.
Close?
It was about 390,000 is where it actually came in. So it wasn't quite a peak day.
So it wasn't exceptionally. It wasn't exceptional usage.
We would not call it a design day. No, we did not experience that.
Okay.
And this actually zeroes in on February itself. And you will see that the peak day that we have out there actually occurred on February 12th, which was really outside of the gross price spikes that did incur that we saw in February. So as we drill down into February, you'll notice the same orange and gray for flowing gas and storage withdrawals. You'll see our yellow for our day market exposure. And you'll also see that the first 7 days, as you compare it to the green and blue lines, you'll see we were exposed to the day market, but the daily index prices actually did not grossly exceed what would be a normally expected high price environment. However, beginning on the weekend of the 13th, 14th, that's that Valentine's Day, President's Day weekend, we were still exposed to the day market, but over that long four-day weekend is when the confluence of issues took place, which drove our market conditions to extremely high prices.
So do you always plan to be exposed to the day market for that peak day?
Yeah, we would know with our strategy going in, we knew there is some level of day market exposure, mm-hmm. Yep.
Would it be fair to say that over the long term that saves consumers or end users money?
Yeah, and there is an upcoming graph that'll kind of depict that. I think it'll answer your question. And this is the graph. So going back to that same November 2017 start period, and we use that date as it was part of some of the questions we received, and we could certainly pull this back further. What this represents is the IFERC, so the first of the month, the regional markets that we're pricing our gas against, as well as Montana Dakota's monthly average, weighted average cost of gas. And you'll see that over the vast majority of these days, our red line, as highlighted in this graph, is considerably lower than the regional markets. With the, you know, obviously with the February exception. I did go back in and look at the February average daily prices. The prices spiked as high as $173 at CIG per MMBT or Decatherm and $154 at Ventura. So those are our regional that we're comparing against. The daily average for the month, so if you put in the normally priced days along with that higher, they were still both over $30. So this mitigation strategy that we do employ kept that, albeit an outlier date, it kept it to around $7 a decatherm when you weighed it all in with those high prices. So,
and Sean, that compares to the $30-some average, the system average?
The gas daily average at CIG pricing or Ventura pricing.
Yep.
So while it is higher, and we were exposed to those $30 average prices, our strategy kept us what I would characterize as significantly below that. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Kevin.
Thanks, Sean. Just to wrap up, as we've continued to mention, our objective in the gas supply in our with regard to our procurement of supply for our gas customers is to mitigate the risk that we can possibly mitigate, and we do that through various components of that procurement strategy, diversifying regionally by supplier, pricing, contracting for almost 50% of our heating season requirements with storage to mitigate price. Our gas supply portfolio takes advantage of favorable pricing when and if that occurs throughout the winter, but also provides some mitigation, minimizing exposure to these high impact, low probability type scenarios when they appear. And keeping in mind that our portfolio, our objective is to make sure that we don't end up in an oversupply situation where we have to inject gas into storage and risk not cycling enough storage out of the storage fields on a heating season basis. And then lastly, but not leastly, to ensure that we have supply available for our firm gas customers each and every day of the year. So with that, thank you for the opportunity to share this gas procurement strategy that we have. And certainly if there are additional questions, I'd be more than happy to address them.
I do one line here of questioning. Back a few pages in the strategy execution 2021, there's just a little italicized line that it was warmer than normal. And I think part of why our questioning kind of started with 2017, at least to me, I don't look at your amount of gas sales as a very good measurement of conditions because you've had some good growth towns and so it would be going up. Do you keep track of weather over these decades of service and average temperatures somehow or something like that to gauge conditions? Because I don't want to either under or over emphasize in my mind the fact that 10 out of the 17 days in the last 4 years that went over the 325,000 were in February. But is it because of these last 4 years? Is some of it offset by the fact that while they've been four pretty warm years, it's set for a couple weeks in February? Or
Do you have that readily available,
so
Sean?
We've actually, over the last few years, we've actually had a lot of colder than normal temperatures on the whole.
So if you look at the 2018-2019 and 2019-2020, we've had some extended colds. You'll recall winters where we've had snow going out into late winter. So we've had, on the whole, colder. We just haven't had those peaks or that volatility into February.
And that's what I'm getting at. The average might be a little colder than normal, but you're well prepared for that. But it doesn't seem, in my mind, just thinking back, like in recent years, we've had a lot of really cold days till February. But is that accurate, or do you have any records that we keep
track of? Since 2014, we have had some colder than normal winters. We've had some really cold Januaries and into Februaries, and then late, even March and April. We have had some really cold winters going back into 2017. So I wouldn't say they'd be warmer than normal, and we would have our total throughput, system throughput, has exceeded normal in most of those years. So.
Okay, thank you.
It's probably because you're not out chasing cows. You don't notice it as much. Well, it's always warm in here.
I can't remember, really, and even in this year, the last time we hit 40 below. And I know historically we've hit 40 below many times over the, 125 years that there's good records.
And one thing to think about is you're thinking about, I'm sure I don't want to put words in your mouth, but 40 below in North Dakota. So we'll have North Dakota get those colds.
Winter.
Typically speaking, Billings and Rapid City may not be in those same night, may not be getting those same weather fronts and things like that. So for all of North, not just North Dakota to get it, but also for Billings, Rapid City, and our entire system to get all of that cold weather on the same day is
And to continue all the way south into Texas with that unusually unexpected cold affected much of the production, natural gas production, that doesn't typically get impacted. So there was a confluence, as Sean alluded to, of issues that fell apart in February. We have had cold Januaries. We've had cold Decembers. We've had cold Novembers, but the fact that made it different this year is the expanse of that cold weather and how it affected natural gas production across the country, and as such raised prices to a rather significant level, impacting all of us. We've not seen this kind of impact from cold weather in a long time to drive prices to $173. Or $156 a dekatherm. It was just a confluence of bad scenarios that all bunched up on the same weekend to drive pricing up.
And
typically, we get through it.
And I'm trying to gauge how much to emphasize the fact that it was really, really cold over a large area versus how much of it is because over the years we're becoming more and more reliant on gas, not just for heating homes and buildings, but for fueling our electric generation system.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. I won't throw all of it on that. This region does very well with cold weather and maintaining gas supply availability. But, yeah, something over that weekend, some combination of issues stretched the production. The demand stretched the available production and created that market condition where pricing had to be such until supply and demand came into balance.
I think that's the biggest challenge when you're talking to ratepayers. When you talk about an extreme weather event and you live in North Dakota, 30 below doesn't necessarily stand out as an extreme weather event. But when you have an extreme weather event, a widespread event like the one that occurred in February, and then you have wellheads freezing in Texas, and you have the spot price going up, I don't think it was a reflection of the strategy that you've laid out in terms of how you secure supply, lock in pricing. And I will say, just looking at some of the other utilities, your peers, they experience significantly higher costs of service for their ratepayers because they didn't have the same controls and mechanisms in place. But it's a tough it's a tough one to explain, and it's a tough one to sell because people don't like to see that spike in their utility bill. But I thought this was extremely thorough, and I appreciate the presentation.
Thank you.
Very helpful. Thank you both. And one of the things that we've got to get into the next one, but I did have one quick question. I hope it's quick. Your storage resources and the availability of that storage, is that somewhat unusual? I mean, do most LDCs have storage available like you guys do?
I would generally say no. We have a tremendous resource in our backyard that most utilities, including, you know, Great Plains, does not have the same level of storage resources.
Yeah, and I do think that's an important distinction that you guys are taking full advantage of. It's great for your customers, and it does also point to maybe we need to be looking for more storage fields as a public policy effort as we rely more and more on gas. So, okay. Should we move to this next presentation? All right, Allison, you have more introductions to make now?
Yes, I do. So, we're here talking about case number PU21-8. This proceeding was initiated by Montana Dakota to request a variance to its surcharge adjustment pursuant to its cost of gas rate 88. This request is related to the February 2021 extreme weather event and is intended to mitigate the impact of cost recovery from customers while maintaining the financial integrity of the utility. Montana Dakota has prepared a presentation addressing these issues. Presenting today will be Travis Jacobson, Director of Regulatory Affairs, and Tara Vesey, Manager, Regulatory Affairs. And I'll turn it over to them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did someone not get a copy? Because I seem to have gotten two. Or are there two that look, have the same cover?
That's the same.
Anybody need one?
Matt, you want one?
Never mind, go ahead.
Sorry. So thank you, Allison, and thank you all for having me here today. As Allison mentioned, we did want to talk about the monthly purchase gas cost adjustment that Montana Dakota Utilities makes. Just to kind of level set, and you all may be very familiar with this process, but every month, Montana Dakota, around the 8th of the month, files a purchase gas cost adjustment with the Public Service Commission, in which we define our forecasted price of gas for the next month. And then at the end of the month, our accounting department goes through a process to determine, based on that forecasted price of gas, whether we under-collected or over-collected for that based on the actual price for that each decatherm. And they, of course, accumulate that throughout a year. And then in September, we file a filing that would be effective October 1st, and that filing determines whether we need to recover or refund any balances or variance from the actual to the forecasted cost of gas. And so you can see on your presentation that as of October 1 of 2020, based on our annual adjustment, Montana Dakota had filed a filing saying that we needed to actually give a credit back to the customers, and it was our intention that that credit would go through September 30th of 2021. So
last year we overcollected.
Right. So we were providing each decatherm, we were giving, for the firm customers, about, 34 cents a decatherm back on their bill. So when we went in, so just to kind of lay out the timeline of this President's Day or cold weather event, of course, February 8th, we file our monthly filing as normal, and then we have our cold weather weekend, right, that followed from about the 12th through the 18th. Well, we got into the office on Tuesday and we were all kind of talking, recognizing that, you know, we were giving this credit back to customers each month for each decatherm. And we didn't quite have our arms around the total impact yet of what the under-collected balance was going to be, but we certainly understood that the cost of gas was well above what we had forecasted it to be, and so there would be an under-collected balance. And so that Friday of that first week, we filed a request to eliminate that credit adjustment back to the customers, essentially recognizing that we didn't want to continue to build on this under-collected balance over the next several months. And so March 1st, we did go ahead and eliminate that that refund and bring that back to zero. And then on March 31st, we submitted a filing to propose an alternative method for recovery that would be outside of our tariff. So when we looked at, again, October 1st, we've got this credit adjustment. March 1st, we said, let's bring that to zero while we kind of wrap our arms around things. And then by the end of March, we were able to firmly say, okay, going into this going into the end of February, we've got an under-recovered balance that is pretty significant, right, for our firm customers, $12.8 million. So at that point, we looked at this and we thought, so what happens if we don't do anything else? We continue forward with the $0 surcharge and we just follow our, I shouldn't say don't do anything else, but rather just follow our tariff as it's written and not ask for any waivers. And at that point, we determined that, and this would be assuming that there were no additional under over collections throughout the future months, that the firm customers would be charged about 79 cents, and then the contracted demand would be about 38, small and large interruptible is about 31, and Air Force interruptible would be about 58 cents. So a relatively decent swing when you look at that change from October 1st of 2020. For our firm customers, that would result in a change of about $100 for that particular year.
So, Chair, the under-recovered balance on February 28th was $12 million.
For the firm customers.
For the firm.
Yeah, residential customers.
Residential, okay. Mm-hmm. We'll just focus on them. What was it on January?
So
of January.
I think it was actually an over-recovered balance of, I want to say, a couple hundred thousand, Travis, do you recall?
Two to three million.
I apologize.
Okay. And that's, I'm trying to tie that to this. Is that from those 4 days where you had to buy on those 4 days?
The vast majority of it was, yes, those 4 days.
Okay. And do you have a slide in here showing what your cost of gas was for those for this time period, like on a daily basis or anything like that?
We don't. I think that on your slide in here, though, we have the cost of gas.
So if you go to the next slide. So we don't track it on a daily basis. We track it just on a month. And if you look at the slide on there, the annual or the average for the month of February was about $7.
But somebody is knowing what you're paying every minute for gas.
Correct.
Yeah, so that month, that you know those terms. You just don't include that in these calculations typically, right?
Right.
You do it for the total month.
Yeah.
So we're looking at the month, like when we file our monthly purchase gas cost adjustment, we're looking at the weighted average cost for the month.
Right.
But we are, obviously, and I think this kind of between this slide and this.
It's the other way.
This slide, excuse me, that's where we're showing those average or those daily costs.
Yeah. All right. So I don't need it now, obviously, but if it's possible to kind of go through those days and show, like, here you're covering. You know, here you were covering with your what your price of gas was, I guess, for those days. Because I think it would be helpful to see how your strategy of storage and, you know, your secured purchase, et cetera, helped, you know, cover much of your demand, but that you just had this exposure to the daily market and how much that really did drive up the price. And so on a granular level, since it's such a specific day and the market just went crazy, that would be helpful to see.
Okay.
Commissioner, I think Sean has something, and maybe once we get done with the presentation, we can have him.
Sure.
It'll be on his computer, but.
Sorry.
Okay.
You can put it up. Matt's a whiz.
Do you want to work with Matt? Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry.
No, that's great. So at that point, we started to really try to think outside the box because, as we said, if we just simply followed the tariff, we'd be looking at, you know, our residential customers would be looking at about $1.13 swing between what that surcharge was on October 1st of 2020 to what we'd be suggesting that October 21 surcharge be. And so we really tried to think outside the box and come up with some options to recover this balance.
And that applies to every decatherm that they use, right?
That's correct, yes.
For the whole season?
Yes, mm-hmm. All year long, yep. And so on March 31st, we filed a proposal, and this proposal was filed really trying to, again, think outside the box and come up with some options that might be available to particularly our residential or firm customer base. And the thought process was to use a 17-month time frame starting May 1st. We recognize, of course, that May 1st may not be an appropriate or available implementation time frame to us as of now, but recognizing a 17-month timeline from May 1st to September 30th of 2022. And the reason we chose to go through September of 2022 was so that we could get back in line mm-hmm. with our existing tariff process. And we also started to think about more of a staggered approach to implementing that firm customer recovery, to really be mindful of the fact that customers have smaller use in the summer versus the winter, and therefore their bills may be lighter in the summer versus or are going to be lighter in the summer versus the winter. And so the proposal was to implement a strategy of $2.046 per decatherm for the summer months, for May through September, and during the winter months have a 39.1 cent surcharge. And so if we look at the next slide to really go through the effect on the customer, you can look at each year and what the current bill would be versus the recovery of the surcharge. And you can see that the thought process was to try, again, a three-prong strategy. One, minimizing the effect on the customer's monthly bill. Two, all the time recognizing the need to recover this under-collected balance. And then three, allow us a time frame that would allow us to swing smoothly back into our existing tariff after this waiver had expired.
And commissioners, I'd just add, so kind of part of this strategy was in visiting with other commission staffs as well, they were interested in a mitigation strategy. Mm-hmm. And so in all four states, we did talk to the staff in each of those. And, you know, it was pushed to try to move some of that, shift that burden to the summer as opposed to the winter. And in South Dakota and Wyoming, we have a meeting next week with each of those commissions. And they, I believe, will approve this method. Montana, on the other hand, just because of the timing and everything else, they've said just wait until your next annual and we'll address a mitigation strategy at that time. Mm-hmm. So, again, it was developed in conversations with, you know, the various staffs and whatnot. So
the trough in the summer months, was that another consideration, higher electric
bills at the same time and trying to balance. I realize this isn't an electric proceeding, but.
And you know, in recognition of that, you know, in August and July, we're looking at $2.05. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, you're right that their usage is so small that if you're a combination customer, you're not going to notice it tremendously.
How come year two is so much more winter months, fewer summer months, or?
Yeah, I think because you're seeing a higher utilization in January, February, and March as far as number of decatherms. And so you've got just a, even though the surcharge is smaller, it still has that same kind of around $4 to $5 effect on the total bill.
And it's 8 months versus nine is the other part of that.
Sure.
In order to implement on May 1st, since we're only 7 or 8 days away, you would need to know what this afternoon or.
Yeah. And
I mean, realistically, is this now, I mean, we're talking about a June.
I think that's kind of what we felt was probably a more realistic time frame at this point.
Would you stretch it beyond September of 2022 if that's the case, or would you be looking to blend the months that remain?
And I think Tara mentioned in October we'll do our annual filing as we normally would, and we can reevaluate, you know, to the extent that there are additional under-recoveries or some over-recoveries during that deferral process on a month-over-month basis. And then that following September, we would look at it again and see where we're at, what that balance is, and whether it's palatable to just take that and run with it, or if we need to do some mitigation strategies at that time as well.
October seems to have more opportunity to layer some of this into, because electric rates, utility bills aren't terribly high in October. You're really getting beyond the days of the heavy air conditioning, electric usage related to that. Why is October, well, the lowest month? Or,
and I don't know that there was science behind it.
Yeah.
We just kind of picked a winter season, and picking October as the beginning, we certainly could alter this schedule to be November rather than October.
Could you, rather than use summer, use the shoulder months where both electric and gas is down, and have that be the higher month where you apply the heavier rate from, like, September to November? You know,
mm-hmm.
where you're not going to be running much air conditioning and you're not using a lot of gas, hopefully.
But like I mentioned, in July and August, which are most likely your highest electrics, you're using about a decatherm.
Right.
So it's about $2.
Right, but the electric is really high, and it's not in September and October, nor is gas.
That's true, yes.
Yeah. Just to finish my thought, Victor,
what do you think? The October time frame, it's in the tariff. It specifies that's when it will be done. So that's the reason. I would imagine it was probably set up in some rate case in the past. So that's what it has been.
So we should decide if we want to give the company some direction from the commission perspective, or ask them to come back with another proposal to
push the May into
wherever it goes.
So whatever they would be doing outside of that would be a waiver request to the tariff, which the commission could choose to approve or not.
I'm not sure you guys are on the same page right now. I think Brian's talking about when they file, changing that date?
No.
And that's what you were talking about, weren't you? Like when they do their adjustment?
No, I was talking about this proposal as a waiver to their existing tariff.
I see.
So, which is, we can do those kind of things. We just have to approve them.
I will say there's a whole bunch of things in here that I kind of like on one hand and kind of don't like on the other hand. Mm-hmm. Get a little more information from staff, and I know we're running out of time, but I will say as far as the concept of one of the things I don't like is doing this in the summer, because it's not only electric, there's watering for a lot of people. True. And there's other shoulder month costs in life too. And I'm just not sure that we're not focusing too much on one aspect of life and not others, maybe in a hurry to do something. But one of the things that I don't like is putting off till tomorrow what can be done today. And we're doing some of that, and I'm okay with some of it because this is an extreme situation. But we're already going into summer with an additional summer of 22 with an additional fee for what happened in February of 2021. And now to talk about, well, if we add a couple more shoulder months and spread out more. Every single month that this gets delayed, we are asking people who aren't on the system now but will be then to pay, and people who are on the system now that won't be then to get off of what was their usage. And so I think this is plenty long of a period.
I agree with you, and I don't, my idea wasn't to extend it through the shoulder months, but rather have the higher fee apply during those months instead of the summer.
Yeah. I was only talking about if we start looking into getting into October yet.
Right. Are we 100% sure we can't figure this out and get it approved? Like, are we already past the time where you have to get the billing in place? What's your last date for May for getting something from us?
And then what time of that day?
Just-in-time delivery.
There is a procedural issue as well, because we have to file a notice of opportunity to allow any interested party to possibly intervene if they would hypothetically have an issue with anything here. Uh-huh. So there's the process issue as opposed to necessarily the just approval
issue.
Well,
there goes that.
So we're already looking at June, but we'd have to notice it pretty quick here.
I have a notice prepared. I just wasn't sure what direction you may want to go on this.
But we'd have to, before we noticed, we'd have to figure out what to do with the 1023 in May, correct?
Right. We have to know what we're doing to notice it, right?
Correct.
We have to decide.
Correct. Well, I mean, if we're going to go...
We're going to do something. Tell us if you care.
Exactly. I mean, so I have the notice prepared for MDU's proposal as it sits. That's ready to go at the next meeting. But if we want something different, they would have to submit a new filing, which would have a slightly different notice to it. So that's why I haven't already issued the notice. I mean, we could have issued that earlier, but I wasn't quite sure where you may want to take this.
If we noticed it on the next meeting, that's May 5th, or is it the 4th?
May 5th. I think Jack said we can do 20 days, for that, so that would expire May 25th. And I think we would have reasonable reason that MDU could plan to implement June 1st with that kind of a schedule.
Okay. Could we see what the impact would be if you just applied it straight out, the surcharge without the, like?
I have those calculations.
Oh, you do?
So it just kind of flips which months you see the higher charges. So it's a shorter number of months since we're not starting so early. It just starts in October. And I can make copies of this for everyone. It's simply using the usage assumptions that Travis used to generate this. I just take that 79 cents per decatherm. You kind of top out in the December to February timeframe at about 1185 per month increase in those months. And then you get down, in the summer months where you're only using about one decatherm, it's just that 79 cents.
And then also if you started, just use the same amount each month for cent, but started it in June. Like started the recovery right away, but didn't have like a higher amount in the summer and a lower amount in the winter.
Sure. We can calculate that pretty easily.
Yeah, I've got it here. I don't have it on the top of my head, but I do have it on my computer. So I can just
kind of constrain how many things maybe need to be figured. I'll try. I think we should definitely start as soon as we can, which is June 1st. And
okay.
I guess I'm not feeling real strong about, because I just don't have an opinion yet whether I'd prefer to have the little bit higher amount over the summer when they don't use much and the lesser later, or whether it be a flat fee. But I do think that whatever it is, it ought to be June of 21 through September of 2022.
So we can look at the order. I can look at it or visit too.
The order for?
Or not the order, the notice.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I have it ready to send out. One thing I was going to say is thinking about folks who may use more gas in the summer versus the winter. That's something Travis and I looked at a little bit. I was initially kind of concerned maybe we have some residentials who have a big summer usage, and we did find some that were up to 5 decatherms, but those were high usage customers that use in excess of 200 decatherms in a year, which
they
is
grill a lot.
Right. Grill, fire pits, things of that nature. But even at that, I mean, you know, 5 decatherms times even $2 is $10. And they're already used to paying a much higher gas bill because they use so much in a year anyway. Mm-hmm. So.
And, you know, there's a certain percentage of customers, too, that are on balanced billing. So they have their own mitigation as well if you're a combination customer.
What percentage is that, Darcy? Would you know offhand?
We can get that for you, what percentage.
Yeah, I mean, but is it more than half, less than half?
Oh, it's less than half, I would think.
Quarter-ish?
Maybe a quarter. Even less than that.
Oh, okay.
Quarter percent.
But that will that be that? That's been offered up, hasn't it? In terms
it's a continuous
of
offer.
When people are calling,
when they sign up, when they call in,
and then you walk them through that.
Right. Okay, so we're going to get from you guys the flat, like this whatever flat fee it is, starting in June. What those numbers look like, we compare to this, and are those the two scenarios we're kind of looking at?
And we just need to also revise this one because we're not going to start in May.
June 1st.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Revise this existing.
I'm good with what, you know, frankly, I don't know that there's a perfect way to get there because, you know, we begin to speculate what if next winter or this coming winter, what if it's significantly colder than this past winter? And then you think you've correctly applied or fairly applied and balanced the charges. And then something changes. What if water bills go up or they don't go up because of drought conditions, or maybe the drought is... Somebody actually told me that in the middle of May, based on... I don't think it was the Onion chart, Randy, or whoever mentioned the Onion calendar. I don't remember what that was, but the forecast is that it's going to begin raining again. I hope that's correct. But anyway, there are just a lot of uncontrollable factors. What's the biggest risk would be an abnormally cold winter coming up? Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, another big problem like last year. This huge spike in gas demand, and you have to go to the spot market.
Mm-hmm.
It's sobering to think that what happens in other states, not just from a weather standpoint, but from their energy infrastructure standpoint, the ripple effect that it has in a state like North Dakota can be significant at times.
So we're going to get those two revisions, and then we'll have a motion on our next meeting to notice whatever direction we go. And if we need another work session next week to talk about those, you'll get one scheduled.
Yeah, I think we should target a work session probably on Tuesday.
Well, let's not do that right now.
I think
no, I'm not saying to do it now, but I think we'll need to target one because I don't want to go into next Wednesday's commission meeting and then have a difference of opinion that...
We don't have one next week.
That's right.
It's a week later, so...
I think we can reasonably put out a notice regardless. What direction you guys give us at this point, we should be able to specify an issue that will reasonably put the public on notice of what we're going to be doing and how we'll be addressing it, even without something specific, I think.
Okay.
Regardless.
Either way, we probably can have it ready to go by the next meeting, because we don't have one next week. Yeah. So.
Or we could put it out, and if anyone requests a work session related to it, we can
sure
do that.
Okay, then I think that's it for this meeting. And then we're...
Did you want to see the screenshot?
We have.
Yeah, so Sean, did you have some info to share on the... to enlighten us on the prices? We're good with that.
The question was just asked, what were the costs on those particular days in question?
Yeah.
And this is just a screenshot I grabbed from some information I had. And so from February 12th to February 18th, which were those cold days, this is just an extract from our data set. And so and this is not specific to North Dakota, so this would be system-wide.
I might have you take a pointer so you can give us...
Oh, I've got one right here.
Okay.
So these deals, these are our gas daily against CIG and Ventura. You'll see the $175 and $153 we referenced. Those are the index plus or minus the adder to the index price that we do. So you'll see that the biggest charges were on these four-day weekends, so the 13th through the 16th, where we purchased this volume over those 4 days. Anyway, the total volume we purchased was 322,300 decatherm at about $36.3 million.
Okay, so just the price you paid is the weighted average price, right?
That's correct.
Per decatherm.
Yep.
And what's that in index, that minus 1.25?
This is increment. So this is plus or minus what the posted, the settlement price was. So when we go out and make a day purchase against a gas daily index, we will make that purchase based on the index price with a discount or a premium to whatever that index settles at the end of the day. And so, for example, this 86, it was gas daily Ventura minus $1.25.
So you got a discount.
So we got a, yes.
Lucky thing, or this would really be a situation.
Whoa, that saved us. Is it $1.25?
It's $1.25, yes.
Out of 153. Oh, good job.
It comes a significant discount in the normal pricing. But
yeah.
Sure.
On that particular day, not...
Didn't matter.
Not hugely advantaged.
All right, and so the days that were the toughest...
They're highlighted in any of these that are the 13th through the 16th. And these were what we refer to as a rateable weekend. So when we purchase gas for the weekend, on Friday we'll purchase for Saturday, Sunday, and typically Monday. On a four-day weekend, it'll be Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And so we were locked in at those settlement prices that ended up settling at the end of Friday on these. And those turn into our big dollar amounts, mm-hmm. our million-dollar-plus deals.
So would you be able to sort this by day, and then we'd see, here's everything you bought for that day, this day, that day, or not? Yeah?
Yeah, with, like I said, I just quickly grabbed a
screenshot. No, this is perfect. I'm just curious would give you the total, or is there other stuff out there that would also...
The total by day? Yeah, we can certainly do it by day. It's just, instead of a begin and end date, it's just each day of the calendar month.
Okay. That's helpful. If you can get that stuff to Victor, that'd be great once you get back. Anything else? Any other discussion points? Victor, Adam, you have any questions?
I'd say it's most important the staff does, because I mean, we can work with them in the meantime as
right.
long as they know what they need.
Right.
To.
Victor and Jack, anything?
I'd just like to ask, so that both presentations and the data responses we've received be docketed in both of these cases. I think it's an important piece of the information.
Part of the record, yep. I was just going to ask if you objected to making everything part of the record. That's fine. And Jack, you don't either.
No, I just request that the record remain open for those two late filed exhibits and maybe a clarification. The first late filed exhibit would be a proposal the company's proposal with a June 1st beginning date or starting date. Second one would be the LA file exhibit with a flat adjustment for the full 12-month period. Is some, which one?
No.
To start June 1st, so it's actually more like
60. Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. And did you want the daily costs late filed as well?
Sure. Okay. Yeah, that would be great.
That's all right with the company.
There'll be no protected information.
That was my concern.
I've extracted it from here, so all you'll see is deal numbers and price indicators. There won't be any proprietary or counterparty information.
Perfect.
Okay. Gotcha. So we'll make that the third late filed exhibit. Okay. That's all I had. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jack. Well, with that, thanks, everybody, for sticking around a little extra, almost twice as long, actually. We were probably a little overly generous or optimistic, thinking this would only take an hour. So appreciate your flexibility and all the good information. The informal is concluded.
Thank you, everyone. Appreciate it.